Hi, Crime Junkies. I'm your host, Ashley Flowers.
And I'm Britt.
And today I have a first, a story of a woman who made it out of one of the most scary situations one could ever imagine. And she made it out alive.
So this is a survival story.
This is the story of how Amanda Howard survived. Amanda grew up in the small farming town of Clinton, which is just south of Kansas City, Missouri. And Britt, she's almost exactly our age. So in 2006, she was a 17-year-old high school student.
Oh my gosh, yeah, totally.
Amanda was in the Flag Corps and she had lots of friends. And her dream was actually to study computer science and eventually do computer work in the Air Force. But know what else she loved in 2006?
Oh man, there's so much to love in 2006, honestly.
MySpace.
Oh, yes.
So good. I like want to pick my top four all over again. She loved it so much because it would let her connect with her friends even when they weren't around. Because again, this is a small town. Everyone's kind of spread out. But it also gave her an emotional outlet. And let's be real about what MySpace was. Like, Instagram's about pictures. Facebook is apparently about, like, forcefully sharing your political opinions. Twitter is, like, short little thoughts. But MySpace was, like, the brooding home for teens.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, it was all song lyrics or poetry. Like, it was basically an online journal, right? Like,
oh, yeah, and all those surveys that you could send, remember?
Oh, my God, I forgot about the surveys. Well, so all of these reasons is why Amanda loved it. And she turned to that outlet in 2006 when she found herself in an impossible situation for a young girl. Amanda had gotten pregnant by her, like, bad boy boyfriend who now didn't want to stick around. He didn't want to be a father. He didn't want any part of her life. She eventually had to drop out of school, and she saw her friends less and less, and living at home with just her mother, as close as they were, felt very isolating to her. So she turned to MySpace. Now, at first, it was just like a call out, a cry for help to her older friends to let them know that she was feeling alone and needed them. But the responses was just this resounding silence. No one was reaching out to her. No one was giving back to her. So Amanda was feeling more and more alone, more and more stressed. She eventually had to give up school, her friends, put all of her dreams on hold. And to compound all of her stress, she was getting concerned about financially supporting her baby. She and her mom were living together on one income, and her mom worked at like a nonprofit, so even that income was very lean. So she just kept stressing, like, how are we going to afford to take care of another little person? Like, and especially another little person who's going to need so much. Diapers, car seats, clothes, bottles. Like, I mean, I don't know all the things babies need, Britt. Like,
no, it's a lot.
Yeah, I hear they're expensive. So Amanda wants to find a way to contribute, but she isn't sure how at first. Like, she can't get a job. By now, she's fully pregnant. But she has an idea. She turns to her online community on MySpace. She makes a post asking anyone in the area if they have any extra baby things that they might need to get rid of. Hand-me-down clothes, anything, toys. Like, she'll take whatever she can get. And she gets a message from a woman named Ashley. And now listen, she is not going into this totally blind. She checks Ashley out. She goes to make sure her profile looks legit. Like, we've all seen catfish, make sure she has real friends, make sure they're posting, commenting. She checks her pictures and her info, and she basically gathers that Ashley is a recently married new mom who's 21 years old. After she finds this out, she's comfortable replying to her message, and she finds out that Ashley's son's about 9 months old, and she had all this old baby stuff that she had no use for, and not just clothes. This is like the jackpot of baby stuff. She had car seats, she had toys, you name it. So not only was Ashley a financial lifesaver to Amanda in a hard time, but she also gave her emotional support. It was so nice for Amanda to finally talk to someone who had been where Amanda was. She felt like for the first time in a very long time, she had a friend. As the girls continue to talk and plan to meet up and exchange baby stuff, Amanda gets a call one day from Ashley. She gets this voicemail and it says, "Hey, listen, I know we're supposed to meet up. My friend's car broke down and I have to take her to this interview in another town. Could you just meet me in that other town? And I'm going to have all this stuff with me. And Amanda doesn't know what to do. Like, this other town is about an hour drive round trip. And she has a car, but she's super low on gas. And she doesn't even have the money to fill up the tank. Her mom's at work. So she calls Ashley back and she says, listen, I am so grateful to you for what you're doing and for all of your help, but there's just no way I can swing that. Is there any like way we can meet another time? Maybe when my mom can take me or when I have gas money. And Ashley says, you know what? Like, don't even worry about it. I'll come meet you in Clinton where you are. So the two decide to meet at a public gas station because, again, by now it's 2007 and we've all wised up to the internet. Before Amanda leaves, she tried to call her mom to see if there was any way she could go with her. But her call goes straight to voicemail and she doesn't want to keep bothering her mom at work. So Amanda packs her very pregnant self into the car and heads to go meet Ashley, who she thinks is going to be her savior. Amanda waits in the gas station parking lot for a couple of minutes before seeing the car that Ashley described pull in. And she's pretty sure it's her because she sees a blonde woman driving, which matches Ashley. But there's another person in the car, too. It's another woman. And at first, Amanda gets this like slightest twinge of anxiety. Like, why is there someone else there? It's supposed to just be Ashley. But then she remembers that Ashley was taking her friend to that interview. So she kind of wipes those uneasy feelings away. Mm-hmm. But they're quick to come back when Ashley steps out of the car because she is not who Amanda expected at all. Ashley's picture showed her as a very thin young woman, but this woman stepping out of the car, she was a lot larger. She was very overweight, and it hardly looked like the same person to her at all. But again, Amanda tried to dissuade her own intuition. She kept telling herself, like, don't be judgmental. This woman just had a baby within the last year. Like, a lot of women gain a lot of weight during pregnancy. Maybe she hasn't, like, lost it.
Right.
So they greet each other, and Ashley explains away her friend in the seat. It's exactly like Amanda thought. She's like, I still haven't taken her to the interview. We're just making a stop here on the way there. But as Amanda nears the car, she had a bigger concern. If you stopped here to give me the baby stuff, then where is all the baby stuff? Because the car looked totally empty.
Yeah, and with like a crib and car seats and stuff, it should be like loaded down.
You would imagine like bags of clothes, toys. I mean, like there was not a single baby thing in it. So Ashley's response is, oh, well, I told you all of the stuff's in the other town where I'm taking my friend. I didn't have time to like go get it and then come back here. So I figured we'd just swing by, pick you up and take you to go get that stuff. And then I'll just bring you back. And to Amanda, this is a really nice offer. Ashley is going out of her way to try and help her when she can't afford clothes or even gas money to pick up those clothes. So Amanda gets in the car with Ashley and her friend, and they pull away from the gas station and drive farther and farther into the middle of nowhere. And it's here, in the middle of nowhere, where Amanda feels the mood in the car start to shift. Where once Ashley and her friend were smiley and talkative, now everything's quiet and very serious, and they keep doing something that worries Amanda. One of them will type on a phone that they had in their hand, then they'll hand it to the other one. The other one will read it, delete the message, type their own message, and then pass it back. And this goes on for a while.
So they're just trying to hide their conversation from her?
Uh-huh. They're like passing messages back and forth, but they don't want to say whatever it is out loud. And that gives her a very uneasy feeling. Now, abruptly, in the middle of all of this, the friend says, I have to pee. Like, can we pull over here? So they pull the car to the side of the road, and Ashley and her friend get out, leaving Amanda in the back seat. Now, there aren't any cars coming, and they are surrounded by cornfields on both sides. Something feels wrong to Amanda, and she can't put her finger on it. But it's that sixth sense that we all have when our animal instincts kick into gear, and we can sense when something bad is about to happen. Just then, the two women get back in the car. Ashley turns around, smiles at Amanda, and then Ashley's friend looks at Ashley and says, okay, how are we going to do this? Amanda knew right then that all of her feelings were right. She pulls out her phone and tries to dial 911, but by the time she hit 9, her eyes are on fire. They've sprayed her with pepper spray, and she tries to keep her bearings. She tries to keep her grip on her phone, her only lifeline, but she can feel them prying it out of her fingers. When they get the phone out of her grasp is when she knew. Today was the day that she was going to die. There was no way she could survive this. And she didn't even know what this really was yet. As Amanda tries to piece together what's happening and think of a way to save herself, she realizes something even more awful. She hasn't felt her baby kick in a long time.
Oh, no.
In fact, he wasn't moving at all, and she begins to panic. Like, this is too late in the term. He's normally moving all of the time. She's about like 8 months pregnant at this point, and she isn't even thinking about herself anymore. All she can think about is that baby, and she starts to beg, please, please take me to the hospital. I think something is wrong with him. He's not moving. She's begging, begging, begging. And Ashley could not care less. A stop at the hospital is not in her plans. But Amanda can see that Ashley's friend does care. She looks worried. She keeps looking back at her in the mirror. She makes a couple of suggestive comments like, maybe we can just, you know, drop her off and drive away. Nobody's going to know that we did that. And Ashley is absolutely adamant that is not happening. And that's when Amanda knows if she has any chance of saving herself and this baby, it's going to be through that other woman, the woman who is caring for her, who's showing a little bit of sympathy. As she tries to think about how to get this woman on her side, she looks out her window and she sees the most beautiful sight in the world. It's a cop on the side of the road with his police cruiser. And she wants to bang on the window and call out for help, but at the same time she saw the car, so did Ashley, who turns around to threaten her. If you do anything stupid, I am going to kill you. And Amanda knows that this is the truth. And so she just watches out the window as the one person who could save her swoops past and just fades into a tiny dot in the distance. They aren't driving much longer when they pull into a deserted motel. Ashley walks around the car to the back door, opens it up on Amanda's side, and says, "Get out." Now, every bone in Amanda's body is telling her not to go inside. Nothing good can happen inside that motel. And she keeps saying, no, 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 no. But Ashley gets her out of the car and forces her inside. When the door opens, it's like a scene straight out of Dexter. There is plastic on the bed, knives on the bedside table.
Oh my God.
She was right. Nothing good is going to happen inside this motel room. Ashley tapes her mouth shut, and as she's doing that, her friend starts throwing up in the corner. She keeps saying, "I don't think I can go through with this. I don't think I can do this." And as she's saying that, she bolts and runs out of the motel, and Amanda is left alone with Ashley. The one person who could have helped her is now no longer on her side and no longer here for Amanda to even plead to. Amanda tries to follow her out the door, but before she can even step forward, Ashley is attacking her, punching her in the face over and over until Amanda just goes limp. She was still conscious, and as she saw the hate in Ashley's eyes, terrifying her to her core, she thought of something. And she tells Ashley, "I have to pee."
Oh, that's like a great, like, pregnant lady ruse.
Yeah, and Ashley falls for it. She's like, "Fine, but you have to be quick." So she takes her to the bathroom, and as soon as the door closes, Amanda starts looking for a way out, a window, a vent. Not like she's even going to be able to fit through a vent. Maybe it's connected to something in a world or she can call for help.
Right.
But in this tiny motel in the middle of nowhere, there's none of that. Amanda still hasn't felt her baby move, and she just starts to cry in the bathroom. She's crying for her baby. She's crying for herself, crying for her mother, who might not ever know what happened to her. And that's when she hears it. There's a knock on the door, but not the bathroom door. There's a knock from outside. At first, Amanda doesn't know what to do. She wants to scream, but what if it's just Ashley's friend coming back, and this could make Ashley more mad?
I mean, but what if it's not? Like, you have to at least take that chance, right?
Well, before she can even decide what to do, there are muffled voices, someone talking at the door. And her ear is pressed against the bathroom door, but she can't quite hear who. Then just bang, 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 bang. Someone is knocking on the bathroom door now. And then she hears the words that bring tears to her eyes. Open up, it's the police. Amanda opens the door and just begins weeping at the sight of her savior. She was rushed to the hospital where she and her baby got checked out, and everyone will be happy to know that both her and her baby were just fine. Amanda later found out that it was Ashley's friend who had called the police from a payphone to make an anonymous report, and she also found out that Ashley wasn't Ashley at all. Her name was Lauren Gash. Lauren tried to tell police initially that she was just there helping her friend give birth.
Okay, totally normal.
Yeah, it didn't seem plausible, mostly because she was acting like all of the knives and surgical stuff like wasn't even there. Like, she wouldn't give any mention to it. Maybe the cops just like didn't see it. It's all very, very bizarre. But of everything in that room, the most telling thing was a piece of paper that showed Lauren's true intentions. On a dresser in the motel room was a birth certificate with a name already put on it, Johnny Gash. And next to it was a small little hospital bracelet like you'd see on a newborn. When confronted with this, Lauren breaks down and finally admits the truth. She was planning to cut the baby out of Amanda and claim it as her own. Apparently, she had been faking a pregnancy for months. She'd been telling all of her friends, all of her family that she was pregnant, and she'd even had a baby shower.
Oh my God.
But as time passed, she got more and more worried that her lie was going to be exposed, and she would rather murder a woman and kidnap her baby right from her womb than be exposed as a liar.
I just don't, like, I don't get where people just come up with this. Like, how is that the best solution? Like, how far do you have to go to get to that being the best and easiest thing to do?
Well, actually, I think she got the idea from a case that took place just a couple of years before in that same state of Missouri. It was a huge case all over the news in 2004, and I'm sure Lauren saw it. In that case, there was a woman named Lisa Montgomery. She was already a mother of four, divorced from her first husband and now remarried, and she told her new husband and friends a couple of times that she'd been pregnant, but as time would pass and there would be no baby, she would tell them she miscarried. Now, I don't know if anyone was ever suspicious of her lies back then, because if they weren't in communication with her first husband, there would be no way for them to know that she had gotten her tubes cauterized, so she couldn't possibly be pregnant. And this was just a lie that she perpetrated over and over and over. But she couldn't stop herself from lying about being pregnant. And her lies were elaborate. Like, she would fake ultrasounds. She'd wear all these baggy clothes. She'd practice like making her abdomen really extended and hard. And
oh,
she would even try to get people to feel her stomach. So in 2004, after three previous faked pregnancies and miscarriages, she was determined that this time there would be no miscarriage. And air quotes are very hard to do on a podcast, but no air quotes miscarriage. Lisa, like Lauren, went online to find her victim. She went under the pseudonym Darlene Fisher and met a young woman named Bobby Joe in a dog breeding chat room. Now, Lisa claimed to be pregnant with twins and made up this elaborate story about losing one. And she ended up connecting with Bobby Joe in this group, who also happened to be pregnant. And they talked about pregnancy, but Lisa knew that she had found what she was looking for. Not long after, on December 16th, Lisa just shows up at home with a new baby. Now, she told her husband that she'd gone into labor while shopping and just, like, delivered the baby herself.
And he just thought that was super logical and believed it?
I mean, this dude seemed to have asked no questions, because he also didn't connect the fact that there was an Amber Alert that same night for an infant baby named Victoria.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I guess in his mind, he's like, well, this girl's named Abigail, so it couldn't possibly be her. And like, it never crossed his mind, he said. That is, until the police showed up at their house the next day. And it wasn't hard to track her. A digital trail led police right to her front door, and the evidence of her crimes was right there in her arms. What eventually comes to light after some time is that Lisa had gone to Bobby Joe's house under the guise of wanting to buy a puppy that she was breeding. So she was let in the house willingly to see the dog, and when inside, she asked Bobby Joe to pick one up for her. And as Bobby Joe bent down, she took a rope and strangled her from behind until she was unconscious. But unfortunately, she was not dead. Lisa's methods were crude, and she used a knife from Bobby Joe's own kitchen to attempt to take Victoria, her baby, out from her belly. But based on photos and testimony from the trial, we know that at some point, Bobby Joe woke up from the attack and she tried to fight back. And we know this because there was blood on the bottom of her feet and in between her toes, which meant that she was stepping in her own blood.
Yeah.
When she tried to fight back, Lisa strangled her again. And ultimately, Bobby Joe died of blood loss and strangulation. Now, the only light in this story is that Victoria was not harmed by any of this. Although she was premature a little bit, she was healthy and eventually returned to her father and given back her real name that her mother intended to give her. Lisa Montgomery went to trial, and she tried to claim incompetence due to mental health issues, but much of her troubled background and diagnosis of mental health issues weren't allowed into the trial, so the jury didn't get to hear them. And don't get me wrong, like, no one who is in their right head does something like this, and there was a lot of serious trauma to make Lisa the way she was. Mm-hmm. Like, her stepfather built this special room in his trailer just to assault and rape her, and once her mother actually walked in on the attacks, and instead of saving her daughter, she held a gun to her head, somehow, I think, upset at her for, like, being the object of her husband's desires.
Oh.
She suffered a ton of beatings. She had brain damage because of them. And now all of that is traumatic and horrible, but that does not give you the right to perpetrate tragic and horrible things on other people.
Right.
She knew she was lying. This was 100% premeditated. And it was one of the most savage things one human can do to another. Lisa was sentenced to death and is still awaiting that sentence in a Texas prison.
I still just do not understand what could bring someone to do something so vile. I mean, it's not like she didn't have kids. She had four of her own, right?
Well, like I said before, there's clearly some mental health issues going on. But she was also sound enough to know right and wrong. And honestly, I think she was just at some point selfish. And there are actually a couple of things that I think played into her decision to do this now. First, her ex-husband said that Lisa saw pregnancy as a way to get attention. I mean, the first four kids that she had in just 3 years.
Oh, wow.
And that only stopped because the doctors recommended that she get that tubal ligation. So she saw that she got attention when she was pregnant. So that's why all of the pregnancies were made up later on and all of the miscarriages. Like, every time she was pregnant, every time she was miscarried, she got a ton of attention. Now, their marriage was very rocky, very on again, off again. Like, they literally divorced, remarried. There was cheating, like a full hot mess until they separated for good in 1998. And then Lisa got remarried to her second husband in 2000. And between the both of them, they were seven kids, Lisa, her husband, and his parents all living under the same roof.
Ugh.
So here's the second thing that led to her doing what she did when she did. I think she lied about being pregnant all those times because she was selfish. But I think this time it led to murder, because at the time in 2004, she was like deep into another one of her fake pregnancies with a December due date. And around this time, her first husband filed for custody of two of their kids. And he, again, knew about her tubal ligation. He knew that she's like spreading all these lies, and he was threatening to expose her. He told her that he was going to take her to court and basically use her fake pregnancies to show that she was a bad mother and to get custody of their kids. And that court date was set for January 25th, 2005, well after she should have had the baby in hand. And she, like, didn't even falter. She was just like, I'm going to prove you wrong. And that's when she decided that this time a fake miscarriage just wouldn't be enough.
That's wild. So Lisa is on death row, but whatever happened to Lauren Gash?
So she pled guilty to assault and kidnapping and was sentenced to 8 years starting in 2008. Now, her friend slash accomplice got 10 years probation. Her name was actually Elisa. And Amanda said that she forgives Elisa for what she did because she was the only reason that she survived. And I think part of that's true. I mean, she's the one who made the call to police. But to me, Amanda is the reason that she survived. She was smart enough to recognize the empathy in Elisa and a appeal to it. She knew she could get her on her side, and Amanda never gave up, and luckily she survived. Amanda eventually got married, and she's living happily with her husband, her son, who she named Ethan, and now he has two additional siblings.
Hmm.
So luckily, you know, Bobby Joe's story didn't end well, but thank God Amanda was able to survive. Crime Junkie is an Audio Chuck production. So what do you think, Chuck? Do you approve?